Welcome to the Bad Boss Brief. Here are your hosts, Eugene S. Robinson and Stephanie Payrollo.
Welcome to the Bad Boss Brief. I am Stephanie Payrollo.
I'm Eugene S. Robinson.
And today, episode 32 is the Playing Favorites Show.
This is a tough one, because if you are a favorite, it's hard to kind of reject that premise. Especially if you are a favorite, then you are no longer the favorite. It's kind of a tough way to go.
Exactly.
And if you're the boss, having a favorite is really great for you, because the person will bend over backwards. So this is a hard one.
Exactly. And so what we're going to look at is some of the nuances, ramifications, and how-tos about, or how to not, about playing favorites in the workplace, whether you're the boss, as you mentioned, the favorite, or the coworker of the favorite who might be slighted. When I was a kid, other kids used the phrase teacher's pet. Did they use that in New York? Okay.
It's a phrase I knew, but in any educational place I was at, we never really seriously employed that. We would, you know, maybe every now and then suck up. When you suck up, we're a little more direct in Brooklyn, but otherwise, no.
Well, when thinking about this, I just did an outline of, like, here are the kind of four different types of favoritism that I have seen in the workplace. It's not necessarily comprehensive, but I think it's a good starting point. So the first one is the mini-me. It's very ego-based. You remind me of myself at your age or your part of your career. So this is somebody who wants to make a junior person, or, you know, someone who is lower on the totem pole than they are, into a version of themselves. Right? Not necessarily bad on its face, but it could potentially be problematic.
Yeah, I see. I've had that happen where I think the boss wanted to imagine that he was a cool fly guy and saw in me the cool fly guy that he wishes he was, so cottoned on to me, because naturally likes attract like. But you know what I had to do then as to conceal the fact that I didn't believe that he truly was a cool fly guy in the slightest. And that's where the suck up aspect comes in. I didn't believe it, but I played along because it seemed to, you know, deliver great benefits to me.
See, and you have just talked about number two, which is the borrowed interest. Okay. So this is where someone in leadership sees their favorite as someone who has something they want. Maybe they're cooler, maybe they're more influential, maybe they're just better liked, maybe they're better looking. There can be a lot of things. I mean, you've talked in previous shows about people wanting to be next to you for that borrowed interest, right? Like they want to be more masculine, they want to be cooler, they want a friend who's a rock star, like whatever. And so that's the borrowed interest. In some cases, it can be useful if that person has a talent or understanding that the boss doesn't, but it's often not used like that. It's often used exactly the way that you described. Like, I want to be cool adjacent, and therefore I'm going to, you know, have you around.
It also has the unique skill of making the person who's appreciated feel dirty for being appreciated.
is that what's happened to you?
Yeah, I have to say it felt like a minor act of prostitution to play along that way, and I was okay with it insofar as it seemed my peers did not know. But it's hard to conceal that in the workplace, because, you know, you're getting bonuses. People are telling you to go home early. You know, they're asking you out to do things. So it gets hard to act like that's not happening. So.
Right. Right. Exactly. And then the third one is what I call the utility player. In this one, the favorite themselves has really lobbied for the position. So they have said, hey, I'm going to help the boss. I'm going to volunteer for projects. I'm going to take over some esoteric but critical aspect of the business. I'm going to work hard to become so useful that I will be treated like the favorite by this boss, right? And a lot of times in these situations, and I've seen this many times, the boss themselves is not aware of playing a favorite.
Yes.
right? Yeah. And in some cases, they may even sort of secretly resent this person because they have so much power. But this is one where, and this person will often get special benefits. They'll get more time with the boss. They may become, you know, sort of a strategic partner or an unofficial chief of staff, and they'll have access to a lot of time and power by saying, you know, I'm the one that gets to be in charge of what goes in front of the boss.
This is the best place to be of all. This is actually the best place to be of all. Because, and if your boss secretly doesn't like it, it's because they're secretly smarter than you thought. Because this road places you, makes you a player. It's an all about Eve story at that point. It makes you a player for their job. And I've been in that position before, and it was a great position to be in, because at a certain point, then you can go to the vice president and say, you know what? You don't need me. You've already got your guy. And that person at that point has to make a decision between you and that guy. And that's all, it just played out in my favor to pick me and not that guy. So, but I was genuine. I was willing to walk in rather than serve under a person who I thought was woefully inadequate. But the guy who I was maneuvering, and it wasn't really conscious, it was just, he knew nothing about publishing. So if I had something to say about publishing, I would go to the vice president, or at least, you know, make myself known under the guise of helping. But the reality of it was, it was pretty clear pretty soon that he was overmatched by the job, and I was the guy, and I took his job. So,
mm-hmm. Well, and then the fourth one is the creep, right? This is the one that is overtly sexual, right? The boss is playing favorites, yeah, with someone who they, yeah, find attractive. And again, this can go any gender combination that is available. This can happen. And I think kind of an easier one to deal with. So those are the in the sense of, like, it's more clear cut, right? And what you need to do is sort of more obvious. You need to go to HR, you need to kind of back it up. So for the creep, do you have creep stories?
Well, I would not call it a creep story, right? It was a story wherein the CEO, I believe, was attracted to me, and I was attracted to the CEO, but we were consummate professionals and did nothing while we worked together. In fact, we did nothing for a long time, even after we ceased working together. And then the clouds parted and this happened. During the time that we worked together, this was a murmured rumor that we indeed were having an affair, though we were not having an affair. And the next company that we ended up working at together, the affair had already ended, and there were murmured rumors that we were having an affair when we weren't having an affair, but we had already had the affair. But it was instructive about how tuned in people are in the workplace to vibes. They got it wrong both times, but both places people could feel this thing happening, probably in advance of me even feeling it was happening. Because when I first heard it, I was like, what are you kidding? And then I was like, oh, wait a minute. So the workplace got there before I did.
I think yes and no, right? So I've certainly been in circumstances where people, I mean, when I was younger, like, if I had had the sex life that my work colleagues thought I had, I would have been, yeah, way busier than I actually was. Mm-hmm. So I think that there are also ways in which, you know, there, and these were with people where there was zero vibe, no vibe, yeah, no vibe, no chance, no shot, no interest whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And so I do think that kind of workplace gossip, yes, sometimes it can be accurate. Sometimes it can see things. That's more of sort of like the rom-com story. I think also it can just be weaponized against people who, you know, can't see some of us as anything but sexual all the time. And the, right, idea that there might be a reason for our success that isn't connected to our sexuality or who we're actually having sex with is tough. I mean, I had an experience once, I talked about this in my one woman show, where I was about to close a really, really significant, I mean, huge, like, company changing deal. And the president of the company said to one of his henchmen, who he had sent out to meet the potential client. He said, "Is Stephanie sleeping with the client?" Like he, which I was not. He literally could not imagine a world in which I could close a multi-million-dollar deal without using, like, without having an affair with the person that I was doing it. He literally, it's like it couldn't get through his head, right? But I think, but so back to the point about, you know, the creep and favoritism. I guess the question would be, with this CEO with whom you had a certain dynamic, did she give you, did she play favorites? Did she give you assignments that should have gone to somebody else or give you things that for which you were not qualified?
No. She, when there were complaints about me, she batted them off. The first and most significant complaint was that, somebody had pulled up a clip from, the internet of me playing a show with Oxbow and I'm in my underwear and I'm choking an audience member. And they thought that this was somehow a disqualifying factor to be editor in chief of a publication. And she went to bat for me and said, "It's a music publication. He's a working musician. I don't understand what the problem is." And that was the beginning of similar attempts to kind of scuttle my ship because I was an outlier in a very insidery place. And she batted them all away in a similar fashion. And that's what kind of got the, you know, that's the entire establishment order there was working against me outside of her. And indeed, when she left, it took about 6 months for them to get me out of there. So yeah.
Well, and you know, a couple things. If you are a person who is in the position of being the favorite, you know, certainly if it is the creep situation, if it's because of your attractiveness or your youth or what have you, that's an HR issue, right? In the sense of like, keep the texts, keep the slacks, anything that's suspect or over the line, you want to save, not in your work computer, in your own personal files, just so that you can, as I have done, get a very generous severance package. But if you are a favorite for other reasons, the first thing you want to do is you want to think about whether or not you want to participate. Right. Because, you know, as you said, and I think we need to name this, you know, teacher's pet was always a bad thing to be when I was a kid in school. But being a favorite at work can be really helpful. Like my career has definitely benefited from having bosses who thought I was, you know, the greatest thing since sliced bread for a period of time. Right. I did get opportunities. I did get, you know, information, attention, training, what have you, that I wouldn't have got otherwise. And I didn't ever feel like I had to compromise my integrity. Right. And so I think being a favorite, like go ahead, but realize that this too shall pass.
Yeah. And also again, back to the workplace, the equilibrium, you need to know if that's your designation. It will irk the people that you're on a dotted line with. They do not like this because they feel exposed and for good reason. So,
right. And I think that is something to keep in mind if you're deciding whether or not this is a position you want to exploit, is to recognize it's going to wreak havoc with your relationships with your peers and not necessarily just your peers. It could be people above you. It could be people below you, right? There's going to be resentment and, you know, that can come back and get you. Like you mentioned that the boss who had been your, you know, advocate, when she left, you were not there for much longer, right? And so I think the other thing is that what I found is bosses who play favorites, first of all, let's not kid ourselves. Bosses who play favorites are not good bosses, period. Right. And a lot of them that play favorites, they do this as a pattern. Right. And usually the organization understands the cadence of the pattern. Right. So some places will refer to the flavor of the month because it's a quick pattern. Right. Like you're the favorite for 2-3 months and then you're not. Or it's something, you know, the boss will take against you for some reason and then you'll not be the favorite. You'll actually be in the doghouse. Then there are some places where favorites will last a little bit longer. It'll be a year, maybe 2 years. But then that will also pass. And so understanding what is the cadence, has this happened, and don't for a minute fool yourself that you're the only one.
Yeah.
And that you can't be replaced.
The interesting thing is if you remember the scene where Michael Corleone took over for Vito, And he kept sitting down with him, telling him what was going to happen. We actually had that moment. She said, "I'm leaving. Let me tell you what's going to happen." And she said, "They're going to come for you, and you should know." And she laid it all out, and it happened pretty much exactly as she said. One thing I refused to do was like the whole story with Christ and being rejected three times the next day. I refused to put daylight between us, even post facto, because we were friends and I didn't think it was right. And they did come for me. And she had one piece of advice for me, and she said, I don't know how to help you get through this, but my advice is this: talk to your coworkers." And I go, no, I talk to them all the time." She goes, no, I'm not talking to the people that work for you. I'm talking, essentially what she was saying is, what you have most to fear are the dotted line people who have been resentful this whole time. Start talking to them and be friendly with them so you can break their ranks so they don't chip away at you." And I kind of looked at her and I understood what she was saying. And I go, "Yeah, I don't think I can do that." It wasn't talking to them that she was talking about. She was talking about strategically making nice with them so that in 6 months they couldn't come for me. And I was like, "Let them come for me. I want to do a quality publication and I can't be hanging around the water cooler doing that. So sorry."
Well, and I think we also have to acknowledge and name. I mean, we're talking about favoritism. This is the favorite show, but we also have to acknowledge there are things that you faced in the workplace because you're a black man.
Yeah.
Mean, that, let's just name that that is probably also part of why some of these people were coming for you. There are certain circumstances, you know, I mean, let's be realistic, right?
I can feel some people when we say that will probably roll their eyes, but in this instance, it was aggressively true when an advertiser threatened to pull $80,000 of ads, not just out of my publication, but all of the company's publications, because they believed that the magazine had become too urban. That was a word they used, urban. By urban, they mean I put Will.i.am on one cover. That was too much. Over the line. So, yeah. In this instance, Stephanie is 100% on the money.
And, you know, and I think that's something to also be mindful of, is that there's not, this is not a standalone dynamic. If you are part of a group that is at risk of any kind of discrimination or marginalization, be mindful of playing the favorite card or participating in that. Now, you bring up this idea of like what happens to the rest of the team, right? So let's look at it from the other side. What if you are part of a team or a group where there is a favorite and it is not you? Okay. I think the first thing to do is to recognize what are the circumstances, right? This person who is being favored may not have chosen it. Right? They may not have signed up for it. They may have the same discomfort that you described of feeling like that sort of like, ew, this is not what I asked for, but they need to keep the job. Right? And maybe they do benefit from it. But if it's not something they ask for, then what I would suggest is ask yourself, is this really impacting me? Right? So are you the person who is on the team with the favored one? Are you not getting assignments? Are you not getting opportunities that are instead going to, you know, going to the favored one, right? And you see this, right? So sometimes there'll be a favorite who maybe, you know, has something that seems advantageous, maybe has more access, but they're not the one. They don't get to go to the, you know, advertising festival in France because it's not their turn or that's not their job, and other people get to go. So I think you have to recognize, because I mean, there's been circumstances where I've certainly been the favorite. I've also been the outsider, right? And I distinctly remember one of those shifts where I went from insider to outsider. And I remember looking, they had these leadership team meetings, which I had used to be part of, that were in a glass, it was literally like a fishbowl, right? It was a glass bowl room, glass room in the middle of this kind of open workspace. So you could see people, but you couldn't hear them. And every week I'd go into that leadership team meeting, and it made me happy until I couldn't. And I had to look at the other people who were in that
Oh,
when
that's
I
so
was
bad.
not, right? But to also recognize, I still had my job, I still got paid, I still was able to do the things that I needed to do. I just didn't get to sit in the glass room. I didn't get that sort of, you know, badge of like, look at me, I'm important. And it was an ego thing for me. you know, yeah, it rankled, but, you know, and the person that was there in my place, it wasn't her fault, right? Yeah. She was just the flavor of the month. That was just the dynamic. And, you know, I had honestly pissed some people off, as I am wont to do, by telling the truth, as I am also wont to do. Like, there are some things that I had done that had disqualified me for that favorite role. And so I think if you're on the team, really be realistic. Like, yes, you get to feel your feelings. Validate. You know, if you're miffed, if it seems unfair, especially if there's one of those, like, the favored one is cool or cute or young or any of those things. Yeah, let it rankle. But don't let it change how you interact with that favored person if it really isn't being done unfairly, right?
Yep. I mean, we had that at Ozzy where I guess it was supposed to be punishment detail, where the CEO, Carlos Watson, would deny me in-house visits with one of our major backers early on, Loreen Powell Jobs, and would make a very distinct point of telling me that he was taking employee number two, would be a Sean, he's a good guy, isn't he, his last name, blasted, Sean, over to Loreen's house. And I was like, oh, you know, I'm not a child. Is there a slide there? Is there a trampoline? What am I missing? I was like,
the bouncy house.
Yeah, it's a bouncy house. I was just glad to have him out of the office so I could do some work. So it was fine. But it was funny how it was supposed to be punitive, and it just absolutely never was, you know.
Well, and this is part of my ongoing campaign to get people to rethink the notion of fairness. Right? I mean, like, this idea that everybody has to get the same slice of the same cake is just, it's not beneficial. And I do think that, you know, and let's be clear, for a lot of people, being in school, high school, middle school, even grade school, can be really rough, right? Kids can treat other kids really, really badly. And so, you know, if you have things that are tied up with, like, oh, that reminds me of school, again, validate, metabolize all those, but this is the workplace, right? And we get paychecks for this. We can't expect there to be fairness. And I think that, you know, and I think it's another thing, like, a lot of times talking with, you know, parents or even grandparents, there's this really clear cultural notion that you can't favor one child over the other, right? And what I think is, like, yes, don't give one kid more attention, more stuff, more praise, more whatever. But recognize that parents and grandparents, aunts and uncles, will sometimes feel a affinity with one child that is different than the affinity they feel with the other child. Right? So a parent and a kid may both be, like, crazy into Lego and sci-fi, and they are going to bond over Lego and sci-fi at a certain phase in that child's life. And the other kid who's super into football and sports, they're not going to share that affinity, right? Mm-hmm. And the girl that's super into football and sports may find that connection with, you know, grandpa or her aunt. Mm-hmm. And so I think recognizing that feeling an affinity with another person, feeling a connection, like, we like the same things, we have the same sense of humor, we enjoy one another's company, isn't necessarily unfair. It isn't abusive. It isn't wrong, as long as the day-to-day resources, time, attention, praise are distributed relatively equally. What do you think? Right. Do you agree? Disagree?
I mean, I grew up with the Smothers Brothers, and that was one of the repeated kind of motifs of their comedy routine. Mom always liked you best. And I always thought that would be the case. But I honestly felt different in my family growing up because I was the only boy, but I was the oldest boy. So it sort of made sense. You'd have to ask my sisters if they felt, but I didn't feel like my parents ever played favorites. We were just different people, and we had different relationships. I never felt like, oh, I wish they treated me like they treated Maya or Pili, or, you know, I never. And with my own kids, when I eventually had my own kids, they have distinctly different personalities, but I love them directly in a one-to-one relationship. So I don't understand favorites. To me, the issue of favoritism is kind of a failure to a certain degree, you know. You haven't tried hard enough in a familial setting. to discover what else it is. I mean, unless you've got somebody who's a real flip case, in which case, you know, loving them less makes a little sense, you know. But I've never personally encountered this, so I don't know. So.
And that wasn't, I mean, again, I just had two kids. That wasn't ever an issue for me either. I mean, I delighted in each of them in different ways. But what I find is that in talking to people, and, you know, and maybe now that I have a lot of friends who are grandparents, maybe it's a grandparent thing too, because you're not as directly involved, especially if you have grandkids with multiple kids who are in different places, and you don't necessarily have that, like, right down the street all the time connection that, you know, you have when you're raising your kids, ideally. But I do think that this notion that there's a guilt, like, I just feel, or it can also be life stage, right? Like, I'm really liking the preteen a lot better than the teenager now, because the teenager is odious as part of her job, right? And so I think recognizing that the same, so first of all, I guess number one is realize that sometimes we carry family experiences and dynamics into the workplace. So if I was coaching someone who kept talking about there being a favorite and their resentment towards that favorite and dynamic and energy around that, I might get curious and ask them to explore, what does this remind you of? Did you have this happen in your own family, right? Like, does it have baggage for you? And sort of look at that, because I do think it's just, it's useful to be aware that sometimes if something is driving us crazy, it's because it has some weight or some resonance. And it doesn't necessarily mean you have to go running to therapy or that you even have to have an executive coach, but just to ask yourself that question, what does this remind me of?
Yeah, that's, and in fact, it's funny that you should mention that, and this should be the topic, because we're about 6 months out from me having had a major epiphany in regards to Oxbow. And about 6 months ago, I realized I'm the only oldest child in the group. I am in the group with a collection of youngest children. And every single conflict that I've had in the band, I can now directly, this is like the Rosetta Stone for my 30 plus year relationship with this band. Everything goes back to that, you know, the kind of resentment that the younger sibling might have for the older one going, getting stuff done, the older one not understanding why people are rankled by this. So I wish we had talked about this 6 months ago or maybe 30 years ago. It would have saved me a lot of grief. Like, why aren't these idiots? And then, of course, it's the older brother thing, oldest brother thing, not just older brother.
Well, and I had the same thing. I mean, I'm also an oldest child, and I can see it. I can see it in my granddaughter. You know, I could just, there's a certain, like, kind of organization, looking out for other people, cautious, at least for me, used to getting my own way. and bossing around the younger, you know, sibling or whatever. So I do think it's useful. And then just one last quick thing for the leaders who worry about playing favorites. I mean, first of all, don't, right?
Right.
But I guess that's where the affinity piece comes in. Like, look really hard at, do you have a natural affinity and connection with one or more of the people that you work with or that work for you? Okay, that's fine. But be really clear about how that gets expressed, right? And what you might want to think about is trying to get some information from other people, right? Like, ask a peer, hey, does anybody ever talk about me playing favorites? Have you ever seen me play favorites? Don't ask the people that work for you that, because that's a power imbalance that's just weird.
Yep. And they'll lie.
Yeah, exactly. Ask a peer, ask somebody else. You know, if you have a decent person in HR, ask them, because they'll know, right? And I think it's useful to understand and to ask, but I think also just try to be clear and, like, almost keep a list in your head, right? And again, we don't want to be samesy. Everything doesn't have to be fair. But what are the plums that are yours to give out? Right? Is it assignments? Is it travel? Is it cool clients? Is it fun creative work? Whatever that may be, are you doling them out in a way that is either equal, right? Or it is skills and strengths based, right? Like, it's not favoritism. If you have a top performer and you give them better experiences or opportunities as a consequence of their top performance, I don't think that's favoritism. Right. Again, everything doesn't have to be exactly the same. But if you look honestly and you have somebody, am I playing favorites with this person? Look at opportunities that you gave them And be honest with yourself. Did you give this to the rest of the team? And if you did, you don't have to make a big statement about it. Just, you know, you can course correct. You can course correct pretty easily and just sort of be aware. And then the last thing for bosses is pay attention to what you're doing in your social life, right? Like if you do socialize with people that work for you, which can be tricky, but if you do, is there one person that you're doing stuff with more than others? Right. It's the old thing about, like, you know, men used to always take other men golfing and women would learn how to golf so that they could get that time and that sort of bonding. Right. If there's something that you enjoy doing, maybe you like axe hurling and maybe there's somebody on your team that also like axe hurling. Don't do that because that is something that singles out that person. If you want to do a team bonding exercise, do something that the entire team can do or take everybody axe hurling one at a time. Right.
Right. Right. Now I'm smiling because I'm having the memory of hearing my employees talk about what they were going to do Friday. And this is when I was at a magazine in Los Angeles, and it sounded pretty exciting. I go, where are you going? And the guys were like, oh, we're going to think about going here or there. And then I said, well, what time are you going to be there? And then I could see this look pass on all of their faces, like, oh my God. And I realized, it was like major in Catch 22. They don't want to hang out with me because I'm the boss. And then I said something. Actually, I goes, oh, I see. I never mind. You guys don't need me there ruining your good time. But I had just become the boss. So they hadn't realized that I was like, you know, I don't care if you drink, just do your job. I don't care if you, whatever thing you're up to outside of work, I don't care. I just want to hang. But I excused myself because I saw that it made everybody uncomfortable. So
yeah, and it's that whole notion of like forced fun that people tried so much to do, and it just it never works.
Miserable failure.
I think that's about all we have time for. If you have any show suggestions or if you want to send us a question that we will answer on our other shorter podcast called Sub Rosa, WTF at badbossbrief.com. I read every email that comes in and sometimes I respond to them. WTF at badbossbrief.com. That's all we got. See you soon.
Adios.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Bad Boss Brief podcast with your hosts, Eugene S. Robinson and Stephanie Payrollo. You can check out more of their work by visiting consigliera.substack.com for Stephanie and eugenesrobinson.substack.com for Eugene. You can also find Eugene at Mr. Sleep 3, that's number 3, on Instagram. Reach out with your questions, concerns, workcase situations, or suggestions to us at WTF@badbossbrief.com. We personally answer every submission. Be sure to join us at badbossbrief.substack.com every other Wednesday for episodes of Bad Boss Brief for our Sub Rosa shorts. Until next time, don't be an asshole at work.